The sting remains for the 49ers more than 2 weeks after losing in the NFC Championship game. Now they have some company in their misery. The Philadelphia Eagles, flying high for almost the entire season, came crashing down in Super Bowl 57 with a painful loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. And now the long road to Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas begins. For the 49ers and the Eagles, that means a lot of changes, including to their coaching staffs. A few 49ers players last week made it known they envision a healthy Brock Purdy remaining as the team's starting quarterback. So what does that say about Trey Lance? Jennifer Lee Chan and I will discuss. Also, Chris Sims helps us break down the team's quarterback conundrum for the offseason. Lance should be ready to take part in the entire offseason program, while Purdy, after elbow surgery, might not be available until training camp. We'll also hear from others with whom we spoke on Radio Row, including George Kittle's dad and Emmitt Smith, the NFL's all-time leading rusher. All that on 49ers Talk, coming at you right now.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Mayoko.
Hey, this is 49ers Talk, brought to you by Big O Tires. Matt and Jennifer, we're not together. We're now separated by a few hundred miles Did you get enough of me last week in Arizona, by the way?
Never enough, Matt.
There we go. Just how I wrote it up. You delivered the line perfectly.
Jennifer. Never get enough Matt Mayoko. No one can get enough Matt Mayoko in their lives.
Oh, trust me. There's a lot of people out there who had too much of me. Hey, there was a theme since the end of the season. Mm-hmm. I want to get your take on. Mm-hmm. Because a couple days after the season, I reported that a player inside the locker room told me that, you know, the locker room would be pissed off, or there'd be some pissed off people in the locker room if Brock Purdy wasn't the starter. Mm-hmm. And then last week at the Super Bowl, George Kittle said on the Von Miller podcast, our offense was operating at the highest it's probably been since 2019. So in my opinion, it's Brock's job to lose. And then when you talked to Nick Bosa on the red carpet before NFL honors, you asked him, is it Brock Purdy's job to lose? And he said, it's hard to say otherwise.
Right.
So I don't, those are two guys I would almost expect them to say, hey, it's not my decision. I stay in my lane, whatever the coach decides. But what do you make of those two comments? And then, I mean, you weren't there to hear what the player said to me, but what do you make of all that?
I think it goes exactly right along with what you heard from the player you talked to in the locker room, that not necessarily that they'd be pissed, but that's what they expect. Brock Purdy played enough to win the starting role. He's proven himself through his 8 games that he is fully capable of working Kyle Shanahan's offense, getting everybody involved. And I think it was an efficient offense. Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate for the offense and the team that he got injured in the first drive of that NFC Championship game, because, you know, I also think that's kind of where the angst stems from in the players during the week of, you know, Radio Row and the Super Bowl, because I feel like they thought they had a really good chance against the Eagles. And all the Eagles did when they were speaking about it after the NFC Championship game and their win heading to the Super Bowl was that they had really done a number on the Niners, and it was a 31-7 blowout. And it really doesn't tell the full story. And I think, you know, Debo has expressed his distaste for what everybody said after the game. Yeah. I think a couple other players have as well. And I think it's because, not that it's a lack of respect for Brock Purdy per se, but, you know, a lack of respect for the situation that, you know, you can't win a game if your quarterback can't throw a ball. So, you know, there's all that. I just totally rambled on into another category. But anyways, I think that reeling it back in, I think that, yeah, both players believe that Brock Purdy has done enough to be the starter of the 49ers football team.
Yeah. And I mean, Kyle Shanahan said 2 days after the season that, you know, it was going to be Brock Purdy and Trey Lance, and they're not looking to bring in a veteran who could compete for the job. You know, that would entail a contract worthy of a quarterback competing for the job and perhaps winning the job, but also when you have the two young players, and especially Trey Lance, because we're assuming he's going to be cleared for the start of the offseason program. Mm-hmm. You don't want him splitting the snaps. You want him getting as many reps as possible. And right. then when Brock Purdy is ready to at least take part in some limited practices or whatever, you're going to want him out there too. So you're going to want those guys taking basically all of the snaps and getting as much right. experience and as many looks as they possibly can. But mm-hmm. I guess my bigger point is, why I'm a little bit surprised is that I've always gotten the sense that everybody has a really high opinion of Trey Lance as well. Mm-hmm. But I guess
I don't think that's changed, though. Yeah. I don't think that's changed. I think it's just that Brock has proven what he's capable of in a lot bigger sample size than Trey Lance. And I don't think it's that they don't believe in Trey Lance or that they don't like him. I just think, you know, when you're winning, it's like kind of Kyle Shanahan in the run game. You go with the hot hand, and who's got the hot hand at this point, you know, minus the elbow injury, it's Brock Purdy.
Yeah. And there's that whole thing, you know, like, oh, you know, a player can't lose his job because he gets injured. Well, that's BS. Yeah. Players lose their jobs all the time because they get injured. And basically what it is if a player who is starting exits the lineup for injury or whatever the reason, and then the player who replaces him plays better than the guy than the guy he replaced, then he's going to keep the job. We see it all the time. And so absolutely a player can lose his job for injury, but it's because the player who's getting the chance is playing better.
I mean, it wasn't too long ago that Colin Kaepernick won the starting job over Alex Smith. And I mean, Alex Smith was only missed time because he was out with a concussion. Yeah. I mean, that's not that many years ago.
No. So, I mean, it happens all the time. It happens in every position, not just quarterback.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl.
All right.
I thought it was a really good game. It was fun to watch.
It was. It was a good competitive game.
Yeah. I do want to speak to kind of this randomness about football. You know, the 49ers have put themselves in position, you know, more or less to win three of the last four Super Bowls.
Right.
And they haven't won it. Mm-hmm. And some of it has been kind of randomness. You know, we don't know if they would have won any of those if Jimmy Garoppolo had entered last year's postseason healthy. We don't know if they would have won this year if they had, Brock Purdy had remained healthy, you know, for the 2019 season in February 2020, you know, there were breaks that went against them, that whether, you know, the offensive pass interference call, you can remember about, you know, against George Kittle.
Yep.
You know, 49er fans are still complaining that Nick Bosa would have had a sack on Mahomes, but he was held. So there is this kind of randomness about football that makes it infuriating, but also riveting. We're glued to the sets. We're glued to our seats because of it. And I guess the randomness in this game was the defensive pass interference call, which I don't know, I guess we can debate it. People say, well, you shouldn't have the officiating determine the outcome. Well, sure. That's great. But if it was defensive holding and they don't call it, then isn't the refereeing or the officiating determining the outcome by not enabling Patrick Mahomes to hit Juju Smith-Schuster on a pass play that, you know, that would have won them the game? So, yeah, I guess it goes both ways, but I didn't have a big issue with the call because it looked like James Bradbury. It's felt like James Bradbury basically held him twice, you know, once on the in cut and then once on the release. And now the throw was quite a bit over Smith-Schuster. And on that play, I'm kind of reminded a little bit about, you know, Kaepernick to Crabtree in the end zone, where if Kaepernick had made it more of a catchable pass or put it on him a little bit closer, then the flag might have come out. Whereas this one, it kind of looked like Mahomes almost overthrew it to the point where maybe the flag stays in the back pocket.
Right. I think there's a few elements to why some fans are upset, is that there was not defensive holding or pass interference called on other plays that looked like they could have been. And this wasn't an egregious hold where, you know, there are some times where you see a hold or, a defensive pass interference, you're like, oh my God, he was all over him, draped all over him. It was kind of one of the lesser of the defensive, PIs that we've seen throughout our course of watching football. So there's that, not having as many calls throughout the game. And then that one kind of like, just, it changed the momentum of the game. It was like, you know, there was, are they going to be able to score? Are they not going to be able to score? It took away the doubt.
Yeah.
So I think because of the excitement and, you know, the energy throughout the game on the back and forth and the lead changes, and you didn't know what was going to happen, that kind of determined what was going to happen. So I think, you know, there was that like emotional kind of letdown at that point.
Yeah. I don't find myself rooting, for one team or the other in games. Mm-hmm. I often kind of root for the better outcome. Like, how's this, the more exciting finish. Mm-hmm. But there was a part of me, well, there's two things. Well, there's a lot that to unpack here, but like how that drive started, the Kansas City drive started, Juju Smith-Schuster ran out of bounds instead of staying in bounds with about 4.5 minutes left. I thought, oh, horrible play. Like, they're in their 4-minute offense. They're going to want to chew up as much time as possible. Right. But then Jerick McKinnon, the former 49er, what a great play. You know, he's been coached up. He knew what to do, and he slid at the 2-yard line instead of going into the end zone. I mean, what a heads up play by a guy that he was around the 49ers for 3 years and mm-hmm. didn't see a whole lot of action because he was injured, but really a good guy. And I'm happy to see him get a Super Bowl ring.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, slid and stayed in bounds, kept the clock rolling, really sealed the game for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was interesting all the way to the end, but I think there was just that energy of like, what's going to happen, what's going to happen. And then that call happened. They're like, oh, well, it's, you know, it changed the odds of the outcome of the game.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. And then, so here's another thing. This is funny. I was reminded, okay, so, I was the biggest sports fan in the world growing up. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, yeah, well, yeah, maybe not in the world, but, top 10. And so for this particular game, I guess I know more people with the Eagles. And so, there's part of me, always the personal side where you want to see the people, win a Super Bowl because, I mean, frankly, a lot of money, even staff members, a lot of money comes with that. So, there's the people with the Eagles that I wanted to see them win because I like them. I don't think I know as many people with the Chiefs, so I wasn't that much invested. But then the Eagles fans, oh my gosh, like, let's tell this story, Jennifer. So Eagles fans are different now. And it's not all fun and games either. Anyone wearing red at that NFC championship game, they had to put up with a bunch of crap. And you and I are walking through the parking lot. Of course, we're just dressed, in professional attire, but we're walking through the parking lot and this Eagles fan, this guy wearing an Eagles hat, comes running up to us, very nice and jovial. And he calls out, Jennifer, Matt. And as he comes up to us, I'm amazed. I go, oh my gosh, how does a Philadelphia Eagles fan know who we are? And he says to us, oh no, I'm not an Eagles fan. I'm a 49ers fan. I'm just wearing the Eagles hat so I don't get beat up.
Yes. Yes. There are quite a few people that I had seen at previous games that were completely decked out in red and gold. And I saw them at the stadium and around it, and much more neutral.
So back to my fandom.
Yes.
Okay. So I was a huge Randall Cunningham fan, growing up and, in high school and college and all that. And so remember those starter jackets, the brand starter. And I think I bought three or got them for, I think I may have gotten them for Christmas. One was a Sacramento Kings jacket, which I still have. Mm-hmm. One was a San Francisco Giants black with the orange SF that was stolen from me. Not while I was wearing it, thankfully. But the third jacket, hold on, right? Hey, Jennifer, can you fill about 10 seconds of time? Because I think I need to show this to prove it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think also at the stadium, there was also several people who spoke about how it was very rambunctious. And then also after the game, in the downtown area near City Hall, after the game was over, I mean, people climbing on bus stops, yeah, climbing street lights and street signs and all the craziness that happens when they win. Yeah. What would have happened if they would have lost the game? It would have been even crazier down there. But yeah, it was not totally a safe place to be. We were staying downtown in that right next to City Hall. And I'm glad we didn't have dinner in that area, that we went closer to the stadium before we ventured back.
Yeah. So I do want to say that there are a lot of great Philadelphia Eagles fans, as there are a lot of great fans for every team. But it's almost as if, like, the reputation of the Philadelphia fan has been to the point now where a certain percentage feel like they have to act a certain way to, like, justify themselves as real Eagles fans. So, but anyway, in my closet, I'm not sure how this is going to go over, but remember, it's all because of Randall Cunningham. This is a jacket I have in my closet. And I think, the starter jacket. And when we had dinner after that game, there was a guy in that restaurant wearing this jacket, same style. And I said, oh, I told you, Jennifer, I said, oh my gosh, I have that same jacket. And I said, you know what? It would have been fun to pull it out if the 49ers had won, but I don't think I can pull it out if the Eagles beat the 49ers. But now that the Eagles have lost the Super Bowl, I think I can pull it out and have a good laugh about it.
It was a funny Super Bowl, right? Because both teams, I think Niners fans wanted both of them to lose, to be honest, because the Chiefs are the team that kept them from winning their sixth Lombardi trophy after the 2019 season. And then the Eagles ruined their chance this season at the NFC Championship game. So, like, both teams have like left a bad taste in Niners fans' mouths.
Okay. Well, maybe the Eagles did lose again, because both of their coordinators have been hired as head coaches. The Arizona Cardinals are hiring the Eagles defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, and the Indianapolis Colts have hired the Eagles offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, as their coach. So, there are, every year there are changes in the NFL, and the Eagles do have a good number of unrestricted free agents. So it's going to be tough to keep that defense together, but also losing two assistant coaches, kind of a big deal. But yeah, that's something that the 49ers have been doing quite a bit in recent years, and including this year, of course. D'Amico Ryan's no longer the defensive coordinator. Steve Wilks was hired to replace him. But also, there's a couple other coaches the 49ers have lost, with Bobby Slowick going to the Houston Texans as their offensive coordinator, and Corey Undlin, 49ers defensive backs coach, going to the Texans as a defensive passing game coordinator. And, that's not a play calling spot, but his contract was up, and that's why he's able to go to Houston.
Another guy who's leaving the 49ers, or who has left the 49ers for the Houston Texans, Nick Kray.
I know.
Is the bump box guy, as what a lot of people on social media call him. He's the guy who carries that huge boom box.
That might be the biggest loss of all. With apologies to D'Amico Ryans, and of course I'm being in jest, but who's gonna take on that job now?
I have no idea. I mean, it happened while we were at Arizona, and I didn't ask anybody. I probably should have, sorry, but I didn't see Deebo Samuel. Didn't ask him, what the plan is. There's a possibility maybe Austin Moss does it. He's player engagement, and he's the guy who is the DJ at practices. Maybe he does it.
Oh, you know what? I say either Deebo or Trent Williams does it.
They just do it. It's heavy. It is not.
Well, I mean, do you think Trent Williams isn't strong enough to hold the bump box?
I'm not saying that, but, you know, like on one side, it's not like it's something that you can even, you know,
right.
Backpack. And a backpack's heavy. You can even like, you don't really want to throw anything out. You don't want anybody to hurt anything.
Yeah, that's true. And also Debo and Trent want both arms free. Yeah. Right. Yes. Wow. Okay. Well, we got plenty more. We dance to the beat of our own drummer here on 49ers Talk and, or what it would be dance to the beat of our own bump box. Here on 49ers Talk? Yeah, whatever. When we come back, we'll check in with Chris Sims, longtime friend of Kyle Shanahan. He's at NBC Sports. He's on the PFT Live show that is taking the nation by storm and the Unbuttoned podcast. So we will talk to Chris Sims about the 49ers quarterback situation and so much more after this word from Big O Tires.
Did you know that the warranty from a tire manufacturer could be voided if your car is out of alignment? At Big O Tires, we install and maintain every tire we sell and offer critical services like alignments. Here at Big O, everything we do is to protect you and your car. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
All right, Chris Sims joins us here at Radio Row, presented by your local Toyota dealers. And Chris, I'm, you know, obviously this is 49ers Talk.
Yeah.
I'm going to just throw it open to
Let's
you.
Let's do it.
When I say San Francisco 49ers offseason,
yeah.
What comes to your mind?
Well, I mean, I guess the quarterback situation just is like, it's crazy, you know, just as far as how that's going to shake out, how the year ended. I mean, unfortunate for Brock Purdy. I guess the big question is just Trey Lance. I mean, you know, to, you know. It's two first-round picks you traded to get him. I know you swapped another one, 3-2, whatever you want to say there. And the fact that it's another year without him playing football, right, those would be concerns for me, let alone the way Brock Purdy played. I guess I just wonder about his future overall. And, like, again, I know everybody. I'm friends with Kyle Shanahan. He's not telling me what the offseason plans of the 49ers are, okay?
Well, get on that.
I know. I'll try to get on it. But, yeah, I guess there's a part of me that goes, I don't expect him to be the starter, of course. And then I do wonder whether he'll even be on the team as the offseason goes. I guess there's a part of me that thinks about that, too.
You're talking about who?
Trey Lance, yeah.
You don't know that he's going to be on the team?
I mean, I just wonder. I think all possibilities are on the table right now. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't. You know, at some point, too, I am a believer, you know, and you got to frame your team around one guy and just go with it, right? And you know, if Brock Purdy's that guy and they feel like he's going to be healthy enough early in the offseason, then I wouldn't be shocked with that. I wouldn't. You know, you're going to always have this conversation hovering over. If you have Trey Lance and Brock Purdy, it's going to be a detriment to your organization. And I think that could be a pain in the butt to deal with.
But now with Trey Lance being so unproven, though, do you actually see a team willing to give up any draft capital for him?
Probably nothing special. No, you know, it's no. You're not going to get that right now. He's a project. He still has work to do in that department, right? I mean, we knew that when they drafted him. So I guess that's where you look at it and go, yeah, are they going to find a value? Are they going to find somebody maybe from, you know, from the coaching staff has gone somewhere else where it goes, okay, maybe we want to try to run that type of offense with Trey Lance, but no, I don't think they're going to be great value. It would be probably a mid-round pick, something along those lines.
Okay, so in your mind, Brock Purdy's the starter?
I would think so. As long as he's healthy, yes. Now, if he's not, then I think you're going to see some veteran probably come into town. I don't think you can just trust, like, oh, Brock Purdy and then Trey Lance. I wouldn't trust that. You know, I don't know how Kyle feels about that.
He said publicly.
I know that he might do it. Right. You know, I know. Coaches say a lot of things, though, so as we know. But we'll see. I would imagine at some point they bring, and not a guy to be a veteran starter, but a guy that they could just trust in case there's injuries again. You got a Super Bowl team, and you at least have the insurance in that department.
Now, what do you think about the comparison between Trey Lance and Brock Purdy and what they've done? I mean,
yeah.
Brock Purdy's already proved that he could be a starter, so.
Sure. Well, yeah, Brock, he can take advantage of an offensive system like Shanahan has. That's the great thing about him. That's why I was going, why not draft Mac Jones back in the time, right? Because Kyle's going to teach them all up and, hey, just read this guy and you do what I say and we'll be successful on the offensive side of the ball. And Purdy is very capable of processing that, let alone he's a very consistent thrower of the football, right? He's not a wow thrower. He's not going to make game-changing throws. But if it's there to be had, he's going to hit it. And that's, to me, where he has a clear advantage over Trey Lance. Or, you know, Trey Lance, great athlete, but the throwing needs work. The decision-making needs work. The seeing the field in the pocket needs major work. And, you know, I don't think that's something that's just going to happen over OTAs.
And is it, how hard is it for a coach like Kyle Shanahan to put together a system for Trey Lance versus Brock Purdy? Can you have that in one season, or do you have to keep it separate?
Yeah, no, you can do it. You know, again, yeah, there's going to be a different skill set there as far as what you would build around. I would think some of that quarterback design run stuff, like, yeah, it might be in the OTAs with Brock Purdy a little bit, but they know they're not going to really do that with him. I don't think it's as big a deal as people try to make it out to be sometimes. You know, it's a handful of plays that the offense is capable of going, okay, wait, Trey is in here. We're going to do a little more quarterback design runs, these play action passes, and the players are usually capable of pulling it off.
Okay, so in 2021, they draft Trey Lance, and they started the season with Jimmy as the starter, and then Trey would get in for certain packages per game, kind of a Taysom Hill type
of
thing.
Right.
And Kyle cut that off after, what, 3 or 4 games?
Yeah.
It's like it became too complicated.
It throws off the rhythm of everything.
Could they do that with Purdy and with Trey Lance? If Trey Lance is still on the team, they can't just bury him on the bench. Don't they have to get something out of him?
Well, I mean, you know, I know theoretically, yeah, you'd like to, but why? We've driven down the field 3 times in a row, but we want to get something out of Trey Lance. So, Brock, take a seat for a minute, and we're going to ruin the rhythm of the game just so we can show the fans that we're getting something out of Trey Lance, right? That's what I would argue. If Kyle was here talking to me, I'd go, come on, don't do that. That's stupid, okay. Kyle, right? That's what I would say to him. I'd probably say it just like that, right? So that's where, to me, it confuses the conversation of back to the offense again. Hey, we're going to rhythm doing this, and now, oh, wait, we're going to go to a handful of plays of this. You're ruining the rhythm of the quarterback, maybe even the confidence of that, right? And then I think you're adding to people like us going, oh, so what's the plan next week with Trey Lance? What are you going to do? Is Brock Purdy going to be in? When's he going to be in? When's Trey Lance going to be in? And that just wears on a locker room, in my opinion.
Okay, so obviously Trey Lance was Kyle Shanahan's handpicked guy.
Right.
And you said all the draft capital they gave to go up and get him.
Right.
Brock Purdy was an afterthought. Brock Purdy was 262 out of 262.
Right.
The only reason they drafted him there was because they wanted him as an undrafted guy, but they didn't want to take the chance of some team getting him instead. Does that make any difference now, where these guys were drafted?
No. I don't think you can't get caught up in that, or you're going to cause more problems, would be my assessment there. You got a special football team. You got a guy here who can run the offense and you can win games with, and honestly can go to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, I don't know who would have won that game if he stayed healthy against Philadelphia, but I would bet it would have been a close one for sure. I think that what was your main point there?
Do you give Trey Lance the benefit of the doubt if it's even close because of where he was drafted?
Yeah, I mean, the benefit of the doubt as far as, like, starting, though, is what you're saying, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If Brock Purdy's better, I'm playing Brock Purdy, period. That's just how I would view it. I have Trey Lance. He's got some things to work on. He's got some raw talent that I see, you know, but I just think it's still a far way off here before we can start to say, hey, they can put Trey out there, they can run the offense and go. As you saw at the start of last year, it was a little bit of still managing him and situations and, you know, not even in the preseason, not on just letting the offense go because we're worried about what he might do with certain plays. And I got to imagine that's still going to be a problem in the OTAs, at least to start with.
So Trey's, like, proving that Trey is worth something on the field is more for outside the building than inside the building.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. You know, I mean, at this point, they know what they got, right? I mean, I think they know that. And, yeah, it's a tricky situation. It really is. It's unbelievable, honestly. The 49ers, as good as they are, and the quarterback situation keeps bubbling up, it's annoying because, of course, I'm rooting for the 49ers and my friend Kyle.
Is there such thing as a quarterback competition? Does Kyle Shanahan need a quarterback competition, or does he already know what he has in those two guys?
Yeah,
what he wants.
I think it's going to be on the field and perform. And, you know, now I'm getting back to what you were asking a minute ago, too. Yeah, with Brock Purdy, last pick compared to third pick, whatever, I'm sorry, I lost my way there, is just that – Yeah, you got to wash that all out the windows and just go with the results you're seeing in practice, in the meeting room, you know, who's being consistent on a daily basis, and then what you're seeing on the football field. And you can't worry about the where they were drafted. You can't. Kyle is a genius, right? People think Brock Purdy, you know, again, I've gotten in a few trouble here because I was like, Brock Purdy's not a top 10 quarterback, right? You can't. Kyle is amazing. I don't know if this would work for Brock Purdy with other teams. If you put Brock Purdy in Buffalo, I don't think it's going to look like this. No run game, and it's just like, oh, live like Josh Allen, make everybody miss and throw lasers around the football field. This is where Kyle is amazing, and he can make a quarterback with not great physical tools have the fan base thinking, hey, this is one of the better quarterbacks in football. And I don't mean to disrespect Brock Purdy that way.
Well, but I wanted to ask you about Brock Purdy because you go through the quarterbacks and you rank.
Right.
Did you even – A, did you look at Brock Purdy last year?
Yeah.
Where did you have him ranked? And have you thought about going back and thinking, like, what did I miss?
No. You know, I saw what Brock Purdy was. You know, I was shocked maybe he was there that late in the round. He wasn't in my top five conversation. He was a guy I brought up on the podcast a little bit to go, hey, here's a guy down the line that knows how to play the position, controls the ball, throws a catchable ball, you know, can make all the throws even though they're not wow, right? And that's good. But see, to me, that's where, you know, there was no elite trait to jump on. There's no, I go, ooh, wait, there's just something here we can really build around. And again, that's where he's the type of quarterback that is a system quarterback to a degree. If he's a part of a great system, he could take advantage of more. Right, where you give me a ton of answers and tell me how to read the defense and get to the checks on the offensive line of scrimmage there, I'll get us in the right play all the time. But he's not going to be like, hey, it's 3rd and 7, there's nobody open, we're not blocking anybody good. Now I need you to make somebody miss and then set up and throw a laser down the middle of the field like a Josh Allen or a Trevor Lawrence or a Patrick Mahomes. That's not what he's going to be.
I want to ask one more question along those lines.
Right.
Could it be true that Brock Purdy is the best quarterback for the 49ers right now with the team they have around him, but if the composition of that roster changes, then he's not the better guy?
Right. I totally would agree with that. I would totally agree. But yes, when you have a great system and then, hey, you got to be a point guard. Give it to those guys. Give it to Kittle. Give it to Debo. Like, that's to me what you were going to lose with Trey Lance. And that was what you're going to lose. It's like Kittle and Debo at some point in the middle of the year are going to be like, can I touch the ball at some point here? You know, so that's where Brock Purdy is special. And yes, like, so that's what I was trying to say when, you know, he can do more with more. That's what I'm saying. He's the one that can take advantage of the system and get the ball to the weapons where, you know, Trey, I don't think, is quite there yet.
I do think part of Brock Purdy's success is the fact that he had so much experience in college. I mean, he had so many starts.
Yes.
I mean, how much does that do for a guy going to the NFL?
It's the world. It's the unspoken little truth of the college evaluating or just the transition to the NFL. Reps, playing, the experience. There's nothing that can replicate it. You know, that's why I'm always a fan, like rookie year, you play. You go out and play. Like, don't sit on the bench, right? You can practice all you want. There's nothing that can simulate, oh, wait, now that guy's actually trying to rip my head off and the fans going crazy and, you know, Kyle's in my ear yelling to play a million miles a second, right? There's nothing that can replicate that. So, that experience was huge. And that's where he has a huge leg up on Trey Lance, who didn't have a ton of experience in college. And now here we are in the NFL, and we're still kind of having that same discussion.
You talked about Kyle Shanahan being a genius. Well, you know, we have a lot of geniuses in the Bay Area on Twitter and everything else.
Oh, yes, you do. I know.
Yeah.
I've seen them a few on my Twitter threads.
And, you know, I find it shocking that Kyle Shanahan, who's been calling plays successfully in the NFL for a very long time, doesn't know what that play action apparently is a horrible play, the play in which Brock Purdy got injured. Can you kind of take us through there and educate us on what happened on that play?
Sure.
And was it just ridiculously insane for Kyle Shanahan to expect a tight end to block an edge rusher?
Well, it's the bind that this team puts you in, the Eagles. It's really, I mean, again, we're talking about a team that is 5 sacks away from beating the 85 Bears into the all-time sack record. So I don't think people are quite compartmentalizing that to go, wait, this is a really special front as far as rushing the passer. They play these 5-man fronts that, you know, put you in a bind, of course, wait, can we really get our 5 linemen on their 5 guys? What if they move around? Oh, no, we could be in trouble. So that was one where, you know, he's keeping extra guys in the block, right? Little play action pass. He's got his 5-0 linemen. They're going to block four of the five defensive linemen, but now there's one guy on the edge. And with that sliding of those five offensive linemen to the left there, if a linebacker does blitz or anything like that, they're going to pick that up as well. So it's all good except for the one little part there. You have a Tyler Kroft blocking one of the better pass rushers in football, and that's okay, but you got to know that, okay, that might have to happen quickly, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the bind the Eagles put you in. I would be something I'm sure Kyle didn't want to do, like where he was like, oh, but beating great teams, you got to take some calculated risks sometimes. They were a half a second away from hitting Brandon Ayuk on a 30-yard gain, if not more, right? And that's one of the unfortunate things. So one of the things Kansas City will have to figure out.
Right.
You want to make sure you can get your five on their five. That's going to be a big part of the football game.
And play action is such a big part of the 49ers game.
Sure.
The 49ers are expecting Hassan Reddick to
stop for a second and play the run. That's the other part of that's what people are missing in the conversation. Right. The play action pass, right? If you're a defensive pass rusher, oh wait, they're handing the ball off. Let me stop for a second because I got to get in my gap. Oh wait, no, he's going to throw it. Let me restart, right? So that usually buys you a little time in that department.
And so Reddick was coached up to just go get the quarterback and don't even regard.
I think so. I think all he was the edge defender. So he was like, wait, I'm only responsible for this outside gap, so I can go. If they run this way, I'm going to just run into them anyways. So he didn't have anything to really worry about as far as slowing him down. And it was unfortunate. And it was unfortunate for all of us. We all wanted to see a good game, and that kind of stunk. I don't know if they're going to trade Trey Lance. I know I just said that. I'm so intrigued by what the hell is going to happen. That's the only reason I was going there.
To Jennifer's point.
Right.
What could the 49ers get for Trey Lance?
Yes.
And it would also signal, hey, the 49ers don't like him. And if the 49ers have had Trey Lance for 2 years and they're willing to give up something much less, then why would we want him? And also, I still think they really do like him in the building.
I don't doubt that at all.
He's a very good guy to have. He's not one of these, I'm either the starter, I'm going to try to undermine the starter. And so I think the pairing of Brock Purdy and Trey Lance, in whichever order, is a very good pairing. The only question is, Trey Lance, we don't know
what
he's
all
about. And Brock Purdy is coming off an elbow injury.
Right, yeah. And Trey, to me, as a backup, would just scare me a little bit just because I think he's a reps guy. He needs the reps. So now that it would be a backup, I'd go, man, I don't know if that's the best thing in the world for him, a guy that gets limited reps during the week and then, hey, it's the game, and, hey, put the ball right on the bullseye and throw it all over the place. That would concern me too. And, again, I'm just throwing things out there. I'm a big believer, like I said, the New England, Bill Belichick, my dad with Bill Parcells, the quarterback's the captain of the ship. There can only be one of them. And it's like why they got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo in New England, because they were like, wait, Tom turned the corner here. He went through a little struggle phase. All right, but now he's playing great. We don't need to hear this, like, Garoppolo, Brady, when's Garoppolo going to play? When's he going to take over? All of that, right? I know this is a little different that way, but to the extent of just saying framing it around one guy, I am a believer in that.
And I'd say, like, Brock Purdy looked and acted like a starter.
He's extremely mature. It's crazy. I never would have expected that from him. He never, you know, never looked like a deer in the headlights. Was very good with his decisions. You know, he missed some throws, but, you know, ultimately, you know, he made up for some of those, and it was a good offense, and he had other opportunities that he took care of. And, yeah, I think you should be happy about where Brock Purdy is and what he can do with the 49ers.
How much does Kyle Shanahan, as you said, he's a genius, how much does that play into the fact that the locker room is behind whoever is
at
center?
Yes, I think that's the key to everything, the trust in Kyle, right? It's Kyle is such a great communicator. He can state his case with the film and go, look, and he can explain it in such a logical way that the players are like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense, and, oh, my gosh, we're going to gash this team this week. And then he's a great motivator that way as far as showing old people run that same play, Jerry Rice in 1988, look what he did, whatever. They believe in Kyle, which they should. Kyle is definitely one of the best offensive minds in football over the last 20 years. It's not just because he's my friend. It's the reality. You go back to Washington. You go back to Houston before that. People don't give him credit in Houston with Andre Johnson and Matt Schaub when it was top five offense in football like 3 years in a row. You know, he's on another level. Him, Josh McDaniels, Sean Payton, Andy Reid, those are like, you know, the gods of offense right now in football.
What was the moment, or what was the one thing where you thought, okay, that's when you realized he was at that level?
Oh, I realized that. I might have told Matt this before, maybe. I realized he was going to be something special, because when I was a quarterback of the Buccaneers, he always used to sit on the defensive meeting rooms. The day would kind of be over. I'd be, okay, watching film. All right, let me start to go home. It's 7 o'clock at night. And I'd kind of peek in the defensive meeting room, and Kyle would be in the back of the room, sit on the floor, listening to Mike Tomlin and Raheem Morris and Monty Kiffin and all these great defensive coaches we had. And I was like, oh, man. Kyle's gonna know Tampa too better than our defense does here soon. And that's where I knew he was next level, at least, of going, wait, I'm gonna learn defense so good that when I make my offense, I'm just gonna screw all their rules. And that's kind of what he does on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Watching Brock,
yeah,
and what Kyle's done with him,
right?
Was there one play where you're like, oh, that really made sense for what Brock can do?
Well, I think, I mean, really, the way the whole year was called. But, like, think about some of the plays we saw just in the wild card game against the Seahawks, right? Play action pass, right? It's play action hard to the left. And then there's Ayuk to the left running a deep in cut across the field, which is kind of unusual through that kind of play action. But nonetheless, it's protected, and it's a pretty simple read. And as long as you give a good fake and set up in the right place in the pocket and make a good throw, big things can happen. I just was like, oh, man, they got it going right now. The way they're running the ball, I remember just thinking of Seattle going, oh, man, this is going to be them in Philly, and this is going to be an awesome NFC championship game. But Kyle, that's where he's great, and that's where he fools people. You know, I had a lot of people telling me Nick Mullins was the next thing, too, a few years ago. Oh, Nick Mullins, he's top 10 quarterback. And I had to tell a lot of people to shut up then, too. I think Brock Purdy is better than that. That's the genius of Kyle, is my point.
Chris, I know you have to go, but yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo,
yeah.
free agent, unrestricted, yeah, this offseason. Is
right.
He going to be a highly sought-after guy?
I mean, I think he's going to be sought after, highly sought after. You know, it's interesting. Like, I look at places like the Panthers and the Colts who need quarterbacks, right? Are the Colts really going to do the Jimmy Garoppolo thing after they've been burned by the one-year veteran quarterback thing for 4 years in a row here, basically, right? So I don't imagine them doing that. I don't know. I just feel like that's a dicey situation for them. If that doesn't work out, their heads are going to be on the chopping block. They're going to be like, well, I mean, what? You know, how many times can we make this mistake? Frank Reich in Carolina, is he going to want to do that? I don't know. He just got burned by that same conversation, right, coming from the Colts. And I think David Tepper wants to develop a young quarterback, so I think that's why he's there. Houston, I look at that. Jets, I think I could certainly see a possibility there. I think those are the two that probably jump out to me more than the most.
All right.
Yeah.
He's Chris Sims. Check him out. Co-host of PFT Live and Unbuttoned. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so that was Chris Sims last week from Radio Row. And we put together, our producer Brandon put together a little compilation of some of the other people we spoke to on Radio Row, including Bruce Kittle and Aiden Hutchinson with a great Jim Harbaugh story, Simeon Rice, Tony Khan, Emmett Smith. And here is that compilation from Radio Row last week in Arizona.
Bruce Kittle joins us here on Radio Row, father of George Kittle, of course, presented to you by your local Toyota dealer. But one of the really neat things I think I've ever heard in sports is what you do for George before every game, the writing of letters. I mean, that's amazing, that what you do and that you stayed with it for so long.
Right.
When did it start? And you talk about that therapy of expressing yourself.
Right.
I'm sure it's... I mean, I know George gets a lot out of it. I imagine you get even more out of it.
Well, you know, it's...
Can you tell us
you bet.
Background of it?
Well, so I was coaching at Oklahoma, and so we were down in Norman. That's where he graduated from. And then after he signed with Iowa, so then he's off. You know, and throughout his life until his junior and senior year, you know, I was on the staff coaching. I mean, I was his head coach for all those years until ninth grade, and then the O-line coach, and then the last 2 years when we moved to Norman, you know, I obviously was too busy for that. So in that kind of, so once he went off, you know, there's just like, Like, college is a whole different deal. And the University of Iowa, because I played there, and Kirk Ferentz, I mean, he was my O-line coach, and then I was on the staff there for 4 years. So I know Iowa pretty well and college life and all that kind of stuff. So it just began as a way of, because he would barely return my phone calls because they're busy and doing, you don't want to like nag them. And even the phone call, you're not going to get very much out of it. So it was really at the beginning my effort to kind of connect with him and I guess coach him up a little bit like life coach, dude, okay, look for this. Make sure you're spending time with the quarterbacks. Watch this film, just kind of talking, the maturation process of both a young man educationally and football wise, because there's a huge process that way. Because as we all know, when he came out of high school, 6'2 plus, 190 pounds, and so there was going to be a process, and we were like, it's a 5-year journey, and so just you got to go to work every day, be patient, trust the process, all that kind of stuff. So that's how the letters really started. So each game day I started sending him that, and back then we didn't have as many resources online and all that kind of stuff. And so it was a little bit of a process. But anyway, so that's where it all started and got him through college. And then I kind of talked to him about the NFL, like, you're kind of big, shot now and all that. But anyway, he goes, no, I kind of like him. And so then we got through the first couple, and every year at the end, we do a debriefing after every season. We kind of review everybody he works with and all that kind of stuff. And then, me too. And I go, you still want me to do this? Because anymore, he knows his football right now. I do. The Niners have been great, though. Don't tell Kyle this, but they send me a link every day so I have all the game film. And so I still watch all his games, and, not too often, but, I'll still send him, I send him a play. I don't think your footwork is right. You ought to think about, just stuff that I see him maybe struggling with and that he might not see, because their weeks are so full. They don't spend a lot of time looking at, they do look, but then, and he always watches it a couple times, but I don't do a whole lot of that. But he knows a lot more about running routes and all that kind of stuff. But I still... whether he's just, kind of let me get away, thank you, Dad. He always says, I don't know if he's going, oh, my God, I can't believe he's telling me this stuff. But anyway, so it's a little bit of that, and it's mostly just reminding him to stay grounded, and really a lot of it, because our podcast, a lot of the work that we do is between yoga, mindfulness, meditation. It's just staying really grounded, be centered within who you are. Don't try to do too much. And really just appreciate every moment. It's a privilege to be part of the 49ers, to play professional football. Every day you go out to practice, there's 10 million kids who dream about that and never get a chance to do it. So just remember how, fortunate you are to be able to do that and appreciate it. And we always talk about, you bring your energy, attitude, and effort level. That's something you control every day. So when you put your stuff in the locker, make sure you have the right energy, attitude, and effort when you hit the field. So just, those are the kind of things it's more about that. And now though, there's so much online, I have so many pictures because you guys post so much great stuff. You know what I mean, Jennifer? I love your stuff. And there's so much, and Kim and everybody and the whole crew, you guys have been so great to us. So we're very grateful for that. But there's so much stuff. So I always do a thing about the last game and the pictures and the, wins and losses and some stats and then kind of tips for the game. And you guys know, really winning football is it's the same stuff every week. Run the ball, don't turn it over, that kind of stuff. Be physical. That's our game. But anyway, but he says he still likes him, and so it's all good. And it is kind of a connection. And so I guess, and so another week or two, they'll take a little vacation, then we regroup. And I always ask him, you still want to do this? Because, and anymore, I probably put way too much time into it now. I don't know. So I'm going to have to, I got to examine it my own, because that's what my, Jan says. What are you doing? I go, finish the letter. She goes, still, what are you doing? It's like, anyway. But it's pretty fun, so it's a pretty good connection for us.
Aiden Hutchinson here with us at Radio Row, presented to you by your Northern California local Toyota dealers. All right, so you have a little kind of, one of those 6 degrees of separation to the Niners, having been coached by Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
Tell us one of your favorite Jim Harbaugh memories.
I can't name a specific memory, but I think it was just one of those things. Every day you walk out to practice, Coach Harbaugh's in our weight room, khakis on, cleats on, shirt off, squatting. And that's like a very normal thing you see from Coach Harbaugh. And you see it, you acknowledge it, and you're just like, there's Coach. And then you go on to practice. So that was that's some moments that we've had with Harbaugh that are just funny.
And you can't unsee that.
No. You can't unsee that. But I'll never forget it.
Yeah. So full khakis, not shorts.
Full khakis. Belts.
Squatting.
Cleats on hardwood floor. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Simeon Rice joins us here on Radio Row, presented by your local Toyota dealers. 49ers, Nick Bosa, NFL Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know how much you watch of him.
I watch him. Because he lined up like he stole my stance. So I look at that. I'm like, wait a minute, this young boy line up like me. I love the way he played.
Tell me about that. Is he one of the few guys who you see in your stance?
Yeah, he with the arm cocked back, 9-7, he wearing my number, you know what I mean? His stance is just like mine, and he gets down, and he's coming every play. It's fun to watch him, man. And he has a motor like no other. I love it. You know, I love the way he approaches game. I love the way he go about his business. It's fun to watch. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, you watch a lot of film on me. You know what I mean? Because the way he's set up and he stands to get in the 40 stands to take off the ball, his burst off the ball, his change up. I mean, competitively, he's to me, the next generation of where this game is going.
Yeah, his back leg is back a little further, isn't it?
A little bit. Yeah.
And so what, tell me the advantage of that?
Well, for one, you will always want to be in turbo mode. You always want to have a great jump off the ball. You know, I was known for having a great bounce off the ball. So once you're off the ball, you know, you're speeding the offense up. You know, you're throwing your fastball. Now you're throwing the changeups. Now you're dictating how the game is being played, how the offense is going to call plays. You know, you can't just drop back and be comfortable. You have to call those select three-step drops. Now the ball has to be coming out very fast. The offense can't get into its traditional playbook where they want to throw the long ball. Everything has to be fast and sped up. And I see when they play that team, I mean, he is the engine of that team in making this defense go.
Have you ever spoken to him, or do you know him?
I've never spoke to him, no.
Would you like to? I mean, it sounds like, you know,
have an appreciation for him, but no, I don't have to. I'm so far removed from the game.
Right?
Yeah, I'm being honest. But I can still have an appreciation for the great ones, the young great ones that's come up and coming. So it's always fun to watch that. So for me, I'm the fly on the wall. I understand the game. I understand what's going on. I don't really have to have a lot of conversation to go into it. Yeah, but all of it would be from an ego standpoint if it was, like, you know, when I'm asking about certain aspects to his game, because I see my fingerprint in that. I don't have to necessarily dive into that. I understand what that is. I can sit back like a fan, and like you guys, and break the game down from a different perspective.
But it seems like you have a lot to offer, too, in that you've been in that stance. You know what it's like.
Yeah, 100%.
And he's still a young guy.
Yeah, but he's doing so well right now. Look where he's anchoring this team. If Brock was okay, if he would have been upright, I think they would have been competitive that game enough that they have a good enough defense to win the championship. Headed with him, and it starts with him because he brings it every year, and that's what I look at. I look at guys that's able to reproduce what they do every year and play at a great level, because it's so hard to play at that level, and most guys are able to do that maybe once, maybe twice. He's been doing it ever since he's been in the league. Year in and year out, getting it done. So, you know, I can shout him out. I don't have to talk to him. I have a high level of appreciation for him.
Tony Khan joins us here on Radio Row, presented by your local Toyota dealers. Hey, I want to ask you about Prague Marathe, because when he got into this a long time ago, there were a lot of, you know, whatever term you want to use, football purists or whatever you want to call them, you know, seam heads, whatever, who were kind of like, this guy doesn't belong. And over time, it's clear that, you know, Prague has been, I mean, dare I say, a pioneer in how football, you know, front offices are perceived and the analytics. Tell me what he means to you and what he's meant to open doors for people like him.
Well, Prague is a trailblazer in football analytics and definitely a friend of mine and somebody, like I said, it's been a mentor to me. I've known him a long time, for a dozen years, and I'm going into my 12th season in the NFL working in statistics and football analytics, working with the coaches and GM. I've never had the kind of relationships and buy-in from the organization in terms of data-driven decision-making that I've had with Doug Peterson and the coaching and Trent Baalke in terms of front office decision making. And I think it in many ways relates to their experiences, Doug Peterson in Philadelphia and his fourth down aggressiveness and 2-point conversions and all the great things Doug does, some of the silent things that we don't see, things that happen off the field. Doug is one of the best game managers and one of the best minds, I think, in football today. And then you have Trent Baalke in San Francisco, who worked with Prague and worked with data for so long. And I think that's really helped make the communication education really good for me and helped Trent and I build a good relationship, because I've known Trent for about 10, 12 years too. And definitely Parag is one of the people who blazed the trail and first used the data to help the coaches, help the scouts, help the GM hopefully make better decisions, and also to bring in ideas. I know for me and my department, we've had good success finding undrafted free agents. So in addition to trying to help and make charts or on the headset with game management, just to help Doug in a tight time where there's not a lot of time to make decisions in NFL games because everything's on the clock, I think it's great having an analytics person in the booth with a coach, and now so many teams do that. But the 49ers were one of the first teams to do a lot of these things, and now it's funny because the Jaguars, we were very early adopters of that too, and I think Parag is certainly one of the first people in San Francisco, one of the first teams.
Not only the analytics, but the contract negotiations. I mean, he is known in the Bay Area as a contract guru. I mean, like, have you learned from him in that aspect as well?
Yeah, absolutely, and I do think Parag and the team have done a great job with that, but I think right now, certainly Trent knows that very well. We have a great general manager and a great group. So I definitely learned a lot when I came into the NFL. And again, this is my 12th season now working with the Jaguars, and the whole time I've been working on stats and analytics. I actually started that department when I came in. We didn't have a football analytics group in 2012. And the 49ers were really one of the only teams that did. And certainly on contracts and negotiating, just exactly like you said, I think Parag was a trailblazer, and certainly his relationship with Trent, they had a lot of success, and now Trent, I love working with him every day in Jacksonville.
We've got EJ and Emmett Smith here at Radio Row, presented to you by your Toyota dealers. All right, so here at the Bay Area, we cover the 49ers, longtime rival of your Dallas Cowboys. But what have you seen from them this year? They picked up Christian McCaffrey. What do you see from him as a running back?
Oh, obviously, he's a dual threat guy. I mean, at one point in time, he was a top five. And I think he will get back to a top five in the offensive scheme that he's in right now, which Shanahan, as a coach, Shanahan know how to utilize running backs and put them to work. And I can expect big numbers from Christian McCaffrey coming down the pipe because of who he is and what he brings to the 49ers offense. So I'm expecting big things.
Okay, so that was fun listening to all those folks from Radio Row. But I want to go back to what Chris Sims had to say. He is of the opinion, and I agree with him, that it doesn't matter right now draft status. It doesn't matter that Trey Lance was the number three overall pick. It doesn't matter that Brock Purdy was 262. His quote is, if Brock Purdy is better, I'm playing Brock Purdy, period. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go who's going to give you the best chance to win. I mean, that just seems logical. And if that's Brock Purdy, then that's who it is.
And I think, you know, with the allure of Trey Lance was that Kyle Shanahan has had these quarterbacks who aren't necessarily dynamic, electric. You know, these guys, you know, typically through the years, he hasn't had somebody who can just go out and put a team on his back and carry that team to victory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at the quarterbacks who were in, just say, the final four, you had Patrick Mahomes well on his way to being an all-timer, if he isn't there already. Mm-hmm. You had Joe Burrow, who a number one overall pick and really good player, and, you know, took the Bengals to, you know, right on the doorstep of the Super Bowl last year. And you have Jalen Hurts, who, you know, despite what some of the 49ers might say, really good player. And I mean, he could have easily been the Super Bowl MVP regardless, you know, even in a losing effort. That's how big the game he had. Although that unforced fumble may have prevented the Eagles from like blowing out the Chiefs. Yeah. And then the 49ers, the fourth quarterback was Brock Purdy, who did a really good job. Nothing you can say about him, but he's not necessarily a gentleman, climb aboard, I'm going to take us to victory. But as Chris and us, we talked about, he can do, like, for the 49ers, Brock Purdy is perfect. But if the 49ers roster were different and they needed more from the quarterback, more playmaking, more improvisational stuff, more just go and win a game like, you know, Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes can do,
right?
Then that's the higher ceiling is with Trey Lance.
I mean, you look at the quarterbacks that Kyle Shanahan has had since being the 49ers head coach, none of them have been, hey, I'm going to carry the team on my back and take them to the postseason. It's never been like that. So I think, you know, when we talked about the five to watch before the NFC Championship game, one of my five was Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. He is such an integral part of the success of the offense, I mean, and the team as a whole. But because of what he can do in his scheming and what he does, you know, with his players and movement, pre-snap motion, confusing defenses, that's what kind of you can have. He can have a quarterback without those extra characteristics because of what he does as a coordinator.
Yeah. And I mean, the one year he had a, you know, an MVP quarterback, mm-hmm. it was Matt Ryan,
right?
Who, and I mean, his, that was one of the all-time great seasons from any quarterback. So, you know, people could say, well, Matt Ryan is that guy. And yeah, absolutely. He was in that 2016 season. Right. You know, also had a very good supporting cast around him, including Julio Jones. But yeah, so that's it for this episode of 49ers Talk. Do you think I'll get hate mail for showing the Philadelphia Eagles starters jacket that is buried deep in my closet?
Well, you didn't actually put it on, so you may be okay. I think people will be a little bit grumpy about it, maybe. Yeah, I mean, we'll see in the comments.
You can't get angry at 15-year-old Matt, can you?
I don't think they'll be angry, but they might be a little bit like,
yeah. Okay.
Not pleased. Not pleased is where I would say they would go. But
yeah, but I balanced it out by making Eagles fans upset with me, too. So there we go.
Yes, talking about their bad behavior.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we should get out of this episode of 49ers Talk before we infuriate more people.
Everybody mad.
Yeah, I was going to say leave a rating and a review and subscribe, but maybe at this point, do not leave a rating or a review. But maybe we'll ask you next time when we end this on a more upbeat note.
All right.